7:02, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in here on a Wednesday. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and the Constable, Chase McCabe. Dalen Cuff, ESPN college basketball analyst, the bottom of the hour. Also Adam Vingan to wrap up hour number two as we get back to the Nashville Predators. And a pretty simple question, and I don't know the answer at all. Why is it that this team continues to get up for the good teams and have success against those good teams? But throughout a lot of this season, it's been up and down, back and forth, win, lose, win, 500 hockey.
Yeah, Tampa Bay Lightning have lost 13 total games this season, two of them to the Nashville Predators. They sweep Toronto, they sweep the Islanders, they sweep Washington, they split with Boston, they still have two left with Pittsburgh. So of the six best teams in the Eastern Conference, the Predators are 9-1 currently. So that bodes well if they can make it to the Stanley Cup Final. Obviously, that's much, much easier said than done. They also started this run by a win over the Kings, by handling their business against a really bad team. So all of the positive signs are there. The power play has come to life. They're playing. I think you could argue the last two games are the most important two games we've seen them play all season, against San Jose on the road and last night to come back and do it again against Toronto in shutout fashion. I think they beat Toronto 7-0 this year in two games. You could argue the two most important performances of the season for the Predators, and they were two of their best. And you're seeing the new guys get involved, and Pekka has a great game. It's all positive. It's all good, and it started with the Kings win. I am not buying into any of it until I see it happen longer term and in the postseason. So 5 out of 7, great. 3 in a row, great.
Mm-hmm.
Do it again. Show it to us again tomorrow night. Show it to us again against Pittsburgh. Go out and do it again and show us that this is not just one of these up parts of an up-and-down season. Show us that this is really who you are.
And not to mention Saturday night in Winnipeg. Mm.
Do it again. Is that better than pay what you owe?
Yes. Please don't ever say that on this show.
Because I still don't
pay what you owe.
I still don't understand why you, a professional athlete, would give back guaranteed money.
Are you a CNA guy?
I don't understand that.
Pay what you owe.
Like, you can say earn your paycheck, mm-hmm. and that makes sense. Kyle Turris has not earned his paycheck.
So then I was going to ask the question.
But guaranteed contracts don't normally result in people giving money back.
Correct.
So just pointing that out.
So if they can get through the West, do you believe that is their toughest portion of the play? Hypothetically, based on all the success in the Eastern Conference, if they find a way to navigate through three rounds of the West, is that the most difficult task? Because I almost feel like we're going to be disrespecting a team that just waltzed to the President's Trophy and locked it up in mid-March.
Yeah, it's hard to analyze what's the toughest thing about winning 16 games in the postseason of the NHL because it's all really, really hard. I think, Chase, you can tell me what you think about this. This is the way I view the Western Conference playoffs. They're going to probably have to go through Winnipeg and San Jose. And
yes,
those are the two best teams in the Western Conference, in my opinion. I think Winnipeg is the best team in the Western Conference. I think San Jose is number two. They're neck and neck. I'm not buying into Calgary, but you're not going to have to play both Calgary and San Jose.
Right.
You're only going to have to play one of them. Winnipeg, San Jose, and back-to-back series is. And then following it up with Pittsburgh would be the one that would make me just terrified. If it was Winnipeg,
just based on history,
yeah. And listen, they're playing good hockey right now. This is what Pittsburgh does. They get to this point of the year and they crush your soul. That's what Pittsburgh's done many times. So, Winnipeg, San Jose, Pittsburgh—that is as brutal and as difficult a stretch as you could ever get. But to me, because of the history, it's about Winnipeg. Winnipeg to me in the second round. If you get over that hurdle, I think you can win the next series. I think you can. They've shown that they can beat everybody from the Eastern Conference. To me, it's about Winnipeg. The problem with this is we are going to overlook the St. Louis Blues, who won the season series 4-1.
Well, it's not a foregone conclusion. That's what it's going to be.
Well, that's true.
They can't. St. Louis, Dallas, struggling. And Minnesota can't figure out what they want to do right now.
That's a good thing.
No, you lose. No, okay, you take it. Yeah. Can't figure it out.
Arizona's going to take it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're in the other division, but they've worked their way in. Yeah, and I see what you're saying. Look, the Western Conference is, at least the teams they have to go through are going to be tough, but, you know, that's why it's the hardest trophy in sports to win. So I think the Predators know that. The fans know that. It does look like that if they get through the first round, they're on a collision course once again with Winnipeg. But, look, we don't know what's going to happen. Winnipeg hasn't been playing great as of late. So, you know, who, and they're starting to get it together, but who knows? Like, I mean, they could, I got to go back and look and see who they would get in the first round. I think, would it be Arizona or Dallas? I think it's Dallas.
I just get the sense, and I could be wrong, but this is just based off of the lack of reaction on Twitter, the lack of reaction on the phones. I think Predator fans are in wait and see mode. And I think they are collectively in that mode until either we get a sweep this week of Pittsburgh and Winnipeg, or if we get to the playoffs. I don't feel like, I think there's a small pocket of fans that still believe this is a really good team. I think there's a small pocket of fans that are saying could very well be a one and done. But I think the collective majority is pretty much with their hands underneath their butts right now saying, let's get to the playoffs because I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think all those fans acknowledge that both things are possible. Like, all those fans realize that this team is good enough and talented enough and has all the weapons to make a deep run, and all those fans probably realize that they're inconsistent enough to lose in the first round. So I think everybody sort of, I agree with you. I think everybody's cautiously optimistic that this team was going to flip a switch and start to play well. We have seen signs of it. But no one is, I don't think anyone should be willing to just go all in on this team yet. It's all the right steps in the right direction, but you got to keep doing it. And so show us again tomorrow night against Pittsburgh. Do it again against Winnipeg. Keep going. You got six games after that, I believe, left on the schedule. You know, if you go, they're five of their last, they've won five of their last seven. They've got eight more. If you go, you know, 11-5 down the stretch, or 12-5 down the stretch, I think that's a good enough chunk of hockey, of playing good hockey, that you can feel confident going into the playoffs. It doesn't mean that St. Louis doesn't punch you in the face, though.
Yeah, it's true.
So, I mean, you got it every single night from here on out, and at least you're starting to see that sense of urgency. Saturday night was a different hockey team. They played a different hockey game on Saturday night against San Jose. If they just, now you did it again last night.
You saw that last night too.
You did it again last night. Now do it again. Keep, just show us again that what you're doing isn't the up of an up and down season. Keep it up the whole time.
Exactly. Keep it up. Join myself and Nash at Walmart in Mount Juliet at 300 Pleasant Grove Road on Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. We'll be giving away 10 pairs of tickets, a pair of tickets every 5 minutes. See, they adjusted the copy on me, so I got to make sure I got this correct. 5 pairs to see the Preds take on the Blackhawks. 5 pairs to see the Preds take on the Canucks at Bridgestone Arena. You must be present to win. Dr. Pepper is promoting their new edition of the Preds logo on their cans. So stop by and buy a 9-pack today. See, they changed it. Yesterday I said it was 60 minutes. It's 1 hour. We've got a pair every 5 minutes. I said the math was 12 pairs. Now it's 5 pairs and 5 pairs.
Now you're confusing everybody.
Exactly. I'm just going to read what I'm handing.
Just show up and you can possibly win tickets.
Exactly.
How about that?
There you go. There you go.
Plus, they're going to have big logos on cans. So that's a good thing as well. When we come back, Jay Billis has made his prediction on the Tennessee Volunteers.
I like cans.
Well, I mean, who doesn't?
Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, exactly. Home of the SEC championship.
Was that on the air?
Yeah.
So Jay Billis has made his pick on the Tennessee Volunteers. We will tell you what he thinks, and also we will tell you how far we have the Vols going specifically, and one member of the show might be changing his tune. It's next here on Morning Drive. As we welcome you back in, Morning Drive, 90s night last night at Bridgestone Arena. Dude, I'm telling you.
I love Liam Gallagher.
Last night, Chris Mason with that hairpiece pregame at the desk with Lindsay. And then I thought it couldn't get any better until I saw Pete Weber and Terry Crisp in the booth. You want to talk about chemistry?
Oh, yeah.
And entertainment?
Well,
they go way back.
I was curious to see how you would react because you weren't here when they were together.
Well, Pete's opening line was, "Well, it's 90s night here at the arena." Although Crispy, neither one of us are approaching our 90s.
So the best line of the entire broadcast was they were talking about the age. They ran through their 90s thing. They said, "Oh, here are the number of players that have worn the numbers of the 90s." And so. And then they go, here's how many players on the Predators' current roster were born in the 90s. It was like 15. And then Pete goes, you know, what's even crazier is this year's draft class was born in 2001. And Crispy was like, oh, my gosh, that's ridiculous. And Pete goes, I wasn't suggesting you were responsible for it. He just throws these one-liners in there that make him a Hall of Famer. And then he moves on to, Cali Yarncroke through the neutral zone, and it's he's just so good at it.
I did the Predators profile piece on Pete and Terry, and so yesterday after morning skate, I had this plan of, okay, I would talk to Crispy, and then I would talk to Pete, and they just happened to be together. So I'm like, okay, we'll just do this together, which turned out to be the best decision because I was in tears the whole time listening to them tell stories, and Pete saying when they first started, Crispy didn't understand how the mute button worked. He would always he would try and talk back to the truck, and he would hit Pete's mute button, so Pete would be muted. Then you'd hear Crispy going, "Hey, I want to run this one back."
Oh, which is like the most Crispy thing ever,
right?
And
the truck would know when his coach hat was going on, so they would have to turn him down because he would start coaching and get upset.
All right, so let's get back to the hoops.
By the way, sorry, yeah. Your C-Mace with the hairpiece.
Oh,
though,
dude, it's great.
And Raleigh had the Nirvana shirt on and the jean jacket. And
phenomenal.
She had the neck thing. I'm like,
so good.
Jeremy Gover, by the way.
That's how everybody looked in high school.
Jeremy Gover was the only member of the media that took part in 90s Night. And he walks into the locker room and, like, jeans and a Nirvana shirt. He had his hat on backwards. And
were they Tommy Hilfiger jeans with like the hammer, the carpenter jeans?
I guess,
you know what,
probably
the little hook for the hammer.
Yeah, the carpenter jeans. Those were huge in my high school days.
They were. It was pretty funny.
We got to bring back cargo shorts, by the way.
No
I agree with
not.
That.
No, we do not.
All right. So Jay Billis has the Tennessee Volunteers losing to Virginia in the Elite Eight. I feel like that is probably the most common outcome for the Vols. If you were to, you know, just poll most of the experts, a lot of them have them getting to the Elite Eight, losing to Virginia.
Well, Vegas would have them favored in every game until that one, right? And then Virginia would probably be favored.
Yeah, I would think so.
So that's probably the Vegas prediction.
I think that's probably the safe approach. I think if they get to the Final Four, it would be a really, really successful run. Anything short of the Elite Eight, I think people will start to go to the lazy narrative, or maybe the accurate narrative, of Rick Barnes bowing out too early. But where do we have the Vols in our respective brackets? We'll go around the room. Braden, lead us off, because you might be changing your tune.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm doing this out of, like, because I'm like the pessimistic fan that likes to think that my team is always going to lose and is always the underdog. Like, I always pick the Packers to lose playoff games. I live in that side of the sports world, and I don't know if, you know, not everybody does. A lot of people live in the, my team's going to win every game. And I just don't live in that world. But I think Cincinnati is a more dangerous matchup than people think. I think they probably should have been a 5 or a 6 seed, and they get to play closer to home. I still think Tennessee should be favored and should win that game, but I think it's going to be much tougher than people think. I think Villanova is the team that's really scary. This is a team that's been to multiple national title games. They've got a lot of experience. They've got the coach. They just got off a Big East championship run where they won every game. Purdue, for some reason, even though I have a ton of respect for Matt Painter, Purdue for some reason doesn't scare me nearly as much because of their style. But if they have to play Villanova in the Sweet 16, I might be picking Villanova. And that is, again, you guys tell me if I am being, you know, like a beaten down Tennessee fan, or if I'm being an objective analyst. I have a tough time seeing the
or
reality.
Option three. Are you trying to incite Vol Twitter here?
No, that's never an option. I don't incite Twitter. I like to.
But they love you, though.
I like to interact on Twitter. I don't like to incite Twitter because I don't need that crap in my life. But I there's very few times in sports where I don't trust my own like eyes or thought process. And this is one of those where the tournament's so random anyway, right? It's just completely random, and weird things happen. And would anybody be surprised if they lost to Cincinnati or lost to Villanova or lost to Virginia? Would anybody be surprised if they made it to the Final Four? No. I don't think we'd be surprised with any of that stuff, right? I mean, the knock on Virginia is that they can't get out of the first. They don't go far enough either under Tony Bennett. So it's not like they're in a bracket filled with national champions. You know what I mean? Like, it's not.
I would be shocked if they lost to Cincinnati
aside from Jay Wright
in round two. I mean, here's the, like, I don't. I know Nova's getting hot at the right time. I just look at Villanova, and they don't look anything remotely close to what they did when they're two national championships. So I don't even know that the Villanova Wildcats will get to the point where they would meet the Vols.
Sure. I mean, now, I like their first-round matchup. I think the matchup with Purdue is fascinating. That's a really good coaching X's and O's schematic matchup, Matt Painter versus Jay Wright in the second round. I just think, you know, Tennessee, it could go – if they have to face Iowa and Purdue, I really like their draw. I really like their chances of getting to the Elite Eight if they've got to play Iowa and Purdue. If they have to play Cincinnati and Villanova, I don't like the draw nearly as much. Hmm. And so it's all about what happens around you in the tournament. And so it's just so random. It's so random to make a run. We wake up and Loyola Chicago's in the Final Four, you know? And, like, one guy hits a jump shot and Tennessee goes home. And that's it. And Tennessee should have won that game last year against Loyola Chicago and ended all of the Sister Jean nonsense in the first weekend, but they didn't.
All right, Mace, what do you got? Vols going how far?
I wouldn't be surprised if they lose to Cincinnati. Cincinnati is one of the best defensive teams in the country. But they play a brand of basketball that I think suits UT, which means they slow the game up. They play really good defense, but they slow it up. They only have, you know, two of their guys that are scoring in double figures, and that's both of the guards, Cumberland and Williams. And Cumberland, I think, is averaging 18, 19 points, and then Williams is averaging like 10, 11. So
dude's a stud.
They're not getting much scoring outside of their guard play, but, you know, they're playing really good defense. I don't know if it's the competition or whatnot, but they're playing really good defense, which tells me, you know, this could be a ugly, slow it up Princeton type of game or Virginia type of game where, or Wisconsin, where they just like to slow everything up and beat you, you know, 59 to 61. So I wouldn't be surprised if they lost to UC, but I think they move on. I think where it starts getting tough is, you know, if Purdue advances. Purdue has a – I think Purdue kills them in size. They got a 7'3" center that can play. And I don't know if Grant Williams and Schofield, more importantly, Grant Williams, who guards him?
Kyle Alexander would guard him.
And then Kyle Alexander gets in foul trouble. He hadn't guarded anyone that big this year. So then it puts the onus on possibly Grant Williams to guard him because Schofield's not going to guard him. So they can put UT in a mismatch. That could be a matchup problem for UT. But, you know, the good thing about Williams and Schofield, they can shoot outside jump shots. So they pull the big man out. Mm-hmm. That's when I think the trouble starts for UT, seriously. If Purdue advances and UT advances, that's where the problem starts. If
so they you're more worried about Purdue than anybody else?
Yeah, I'm more worried about Purdue. But then if they pass Purdue, then obviously if Virginia continues to go. I think at this point right now, if Virginia continues to play the way they've been playing, they are a Final Four team, potentially a national championship team because they have everything that you need. They play really good defense. They slow the game up. They can speed it up if they want to. They got size, and they got shooters.
Yeah. I came away from the tournament this weekend. I learned more about Tennessee in the Kentucky game than I did in Sunday's Auburn game, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
The win told me more than the loss did.
Yeah, the Saturday meant way more to that team. I mean, they've already talked about it, which, again, I'm not saying is a good thing. Mm-hmm. You should get up for the championship
And that's
game,
a bad
but,
thing to me.
But there also is a lot of history saying that there's no real correlation between what happens in a championship game and your tournament run. There's no – teams lose all the time. And then, you know, famously, Vanderbilt beat Anthony Davis in Kentucky in the SEC championship game, and then – Anthony Davis and company went on to win a national title. I will say, here's my question for you guys. Should we be rooting for Old Dominion against Purdue, Iowa against Cincinnati, and St. Mary's against Villanova?
Based on seeds, yeah.
Like, root for all the upsets if you're Tennessee. Does it cheapen the run?
No.
If you beat – because their run of the Sweet 16 with Konzo Martin, I think, was like they beat a 6 seed and then like a Mercer, I think, as like a 15 seed or something. Like, they didn't beat great teams to get to where they had to play Michigan. Does it cheapen the run if you beat a 15, a 10, and a 14?
No, because at the end of the day,
you take the run.
You won what? If you win a national championship, you win six games? 64, 32, 16,
62,
64. So to me, I don't think – has there ever been a team that won a national championship where the narrative was – well, they beat three of their six teams they beat were double-digit seeds.
Nah, because eventually you got to play single –
you gotta play great teams.
You know, seed. And in order to win a championship, that's how it was going to be this year, unless the unexpected happened, which we don't expect that to be the case. But going back to UT, and what this is what I learned about UT is that if they play a team that's up-tempo, they're not suited to play that type of game. That's why when I look at them and they play UC, the advantage UT to me when they play Cincinnati, because Cincinnati likes to slow it down. They play really good defense. Well, UT, you're feeding right into what UT does, because they like to give it to Grant Williams on a low blocks. He can also pop out and shoot. That's what they like to do, pressure you up the court if need be. When they play against Virginia or Purdue, yes, the style works in their favor, but the height doesn't, because Purdue
is big. They can't win a title.
That's the problem moving forward, because UT has proved
So you don't like them against size down low, but you also don't like them against up tempo guards.
I really don't like them against up tempo guards. If they slow it down,
I think Cincinnati plays more up tempo than you think.
No, Cincinnati's only averaging 70 points a game, and they're the 12th best team in the country as far as points given up. They are a slow it up team. They're not trying to get the ball up. They don't play this fast, frenetic type of basketball that we are accustomed to UC playing. They just don't play that type of game. But they play it more so in that realm where Tennessee likes to play. Tennessee doesn't want to be, you know, up and down a court like Kentucky. They don't necessarily want to slow it all the way down. They want to be in that happy medium. And when you play UC, that's that happy medium. When you play Purdue, I like it, but Purdue has size. That's the part that scares me for UT. Purdue has size. But then Virginia, the weird part about Virginia is they play great defense, but they're capable of taking it and speeding the ball up, because they got a bunch of shooters. And they got guys that are long.
This is why Villanova scares me. This is why Villanova scares me, because they play that game where a bunch of different guys can do a bunch of different things, and they're all like, there are no Auburns in this bracket.
No,
that's the good thing for Tennessee, and the only team that might be close to Auburn to me is Villanova, and that's why they scare me, is because when Auburn, we saw what Auburn's style of play does to this team. Now, they were also exhausted because their Super Bowl was the day before. Yep. We can call that a bad thing. It is a bad thing. It also was their championship game.
UT wins if one thing happens, because he's going to play his game regardless. He's going to be that guy, and you're going to have to stop him. And from what I've seen, can't nobody stop him. That's how good he is. But the guard play, UT.
Yep.
The guard play, they must come out and play. If they don't get any guard play, they will not win, not even in the first round.
Well, I think you can count.
If they don't get any guard play, they will not win in the first round.
I think you can count on Jordan Bone. Will Turner and Bowden
exactly
be a combined 3 for 15, or will they make a couple of threes?
Absolutely.
We've been saying it on the show for 2 months. If the backcourt is efficient and doesn't turn the ball over, Tennessee can get to the Final Four.
Yeah.
If they do not, they will lose. And I think it's all about the backcourt. I've been saying it for 2 months.
All right, let's get your Vols calls, your March Madness calls, 615-737-1025. We were going to have Dalen Cuff from ESPN, college basketball analyst, but he had to cancel with SportsCenter hits 2 days in a row. So he's done. He's
gonna
out.
He's going to do SportsCenter on television instead of our show?
He's finished. No longer trying to get this guy on the show. You're not Jay Billis. If it's that difficult to get you, we'll go elsewhere.
Got some.
Are you a CNN guy?
You got some Chris Russo coming out there.
Not ruining our show. Your calls when we come back. And also, NCAA conference bragging rights. I'll explain next. Morning Drive. 7:33, it is Morning Drive. Nick Braden, D. Mace, and the Constable. Your phone call is 615-737-1025. Rob in Nashville wants to talk a little bit about Grant Williams. He's up next on Morning Drive. What's up, Rob?
All I'm going to say is, like, you know, we got this. I got Tennessee going to the – I got Tennessee actually beating Duke, if they can keep their head right. And I got Auburn beating North Carolina. So, I mean – you say about this guy from Purdue, he's like 7'3". He's, you know, he's goofy. We're going to do this. Keep your head up. So let's go.
So hold on. Just so I get this right, Rob, you've got the Vols winning the national title over Duke, which makes sense, but then you've got Auburn beating Carolina in the Sweet 16?
I do. If they can keep their hot streak of hitting threes, oh, yeah. Okay. Win and dive out of three.
Yeah, okay.
It's a very random prediction.
Yeah, if was the fifth we all be drunk. And the kid is not goofy. Just because he's a 7'3" white kid, he's not goofy.
Yeah.
He can play.
But speaking of Auburn, am I crazy? Like, last night I'm watching that Belmont game, and I slipped into ATS mode.
Did you?
Auburn Drama Syndrome.
Against the spread?
No. That's my other favorite ATS. Auburn Drama Syndrome, because I thought Belmont last night, and I know that the quality of player is much lower. Their game resembled Auburn last night.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Get up and down the floor and jack threes. Yeah.
Well, and that's why Derek's right. I agree that that's the style of play that concerns you the most about Tennessee. Because what happened when – now, again, they were exhausted because of all the – like, two things can be true here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Losing to Auburn by 30 in the SEC title game is not good. I know it wasn't 30. Don't at me. That's one side of your brain. The other side of it is it actually was a huge focus of them to beat Kentucky. The Kentucky game mattered more to them. And I know that sounds weird to say, and it sounds like an excuse, but it is true. The Kentucky game took a lot out of you. The problem with that argument is that Auburn played more games, right? Auburn played just as many games. They had a double bye. Like, they played all the same number of games in the same order in the same number of days, and they didn't have a problem with energy on Sunday. So it's two things that exist there. I think this team is refocused. I think they're re-energized. The problem with the Auburn matchup was the guards get flustered, and they turn the ball over. And when the guards turn the ball over, this team puts itself behind, and they cannot make the comeback. So if the guards are efficient and they don't turn the ball over, which a frenetic style of play tends to do, right? Like, they force – if Cincinnati is going to pressure on defense – I'm not saying up and down, but if they're going to pressure on defense, Mick Cronin's teams always play good defense, and they're pressuring those backcourt players into turnovers, they don't have to play an up-and-down style. They will turn it into a turnover fest – and that hurts Tennessee. So it doesn't feel like there's a lot of Auburns in this bracket for Tennessee, and that's a fortunate draw. I'd much rather see Iowa in the second round than Cincinnati. I'd much rather see Purdue than Villanova. That's just my personal opinion. And we all think that Virginia probably gets to the Elite Eight. So, listen, you're going to have to beat great teams. You're going to have to play great basketball. They've got the front court. It's a proven commodity. Let's see what the back court does.
And for the caller that called in and talked about Matt Harms. The kid, his last five games, and if you call this goofy, well, I take goofy all day, every day. 21 points, 12 points. He had three against – they had a loss against Minnesota. Came back with 11, 16. He averages two block shots a game. He averages around 9 rebounds per game. I don't know if you want to call that goofy, put him on my team. Any day, every day, because the guy's a good player. He's a sophomore. Obviously, he needs to grow more. Obviously, not grow more, mean height-wise, but I'm saying as a player, just as the knowledge of the game at the college level.
And I wonder about – so Cincinnati plays sort of a matchup zone on defense, and I wonder about that stylistically. Is that how you can sort of neutralize Grant Williams to some degree?
Yeah, you probably.
Which again, puts pressure on the guards to shoot the ball efficiently.
So that's why
it all comes back to the back. The backcourt is what wins you games in the tournament. Size is important. Front court's great. Rebounding, execution, blah, 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 blah. It's about your backcourt and taking care of the basketball.
615-737-1025. Let's go to Mike in Dixon, who's up on Morning
Mikey.
Drive. What's up, Mikey?
Hey, how's it going?
What's going on, bud?
Going good.
Yeah, I think everybody's overlooking Oregon, and I know they're a Pac-12 team. Pac-12 has been pretty down this year, and this is coming from an Arizona Wildcat fan.
Mm-hmm.
But every year, Oregon overperforms. They're very athletic. They're on an 8-game roll. And, you know, that entire side of the bracket it's not very good this year.
Well, that kid, the 7'2 center for Oregon, I think his name is Bol Bol. B-O-L, and his last name is B-O-L. He's got like two of the same names. He's unbelievably good.
Yeah. No, have you seen that kid, like his high school tape? The kid is unbelievable.
Yeah.
He was at the high school
21
level.
21 points a game as a freshman.
Let me ask you guys this. I have Oregon beating Wisconsin as a 12 seed and beating Kansas State and going to the Sweet 16 as a 12 seed. Does that mean I'm overlooking Oregon?
No, it's not.
That means I'm giving
them
all the credit in the world.
Of the four matchups of 12 seeds against 5 seeds, Oregon is the smallest underdog. They're only a point and a half underdog to Wisconsin. So I know everybody loves Murray State and a bunch of other fives, a bunch of other 12s. Oregon, to me, is the best 12 of the group.
Well, they're playing the best basketball, that's for sure. I've actually got Murray State, Oregon, and New Mexico State all winning, all three 12 seeds. New Mexico State, the problem with Auburn is that Auburn could just not shoot the ball well and get run out of the building.
Yeah.
That's the problem with Auburn. And, you know, New Mexico State's got 30 wins. They've got size. That's a team that, again, it's kind of like Belmont. When you are used to winning every single night that you play, there's a confidence level there. And that's why we see these mid-major teams win these games all the time in the tournament. Oregon is a little different. They're a Power 5 team, but they are hot. They've won 8 straight. They won the Pac-12 tournament. And they are playing a Wisconsin team that, frankly, doesn't have a lot of athletes.
Even Auburn, if you look at the UT game, I know they beat UT by 20, but they are a high-volume three-point shooting team. And they didn't shoot. UT shot better than them from the three-point range. But the problem with that was UT turned the ball over 17 times. So they gave them more shots. So if you don't turn the ball over against Auburn, they're going to shoot themselves out because they're taking a bunch of three-pointers and they're not shooting them at a high percentage. Yep. The problem with UT is that, okay, yeah, they didn't shoot them at a high percentage, but you turned the ball over 17 times too.
The other thing is the strategy of picking a correct bracket, is it just to just pick a bunch of upsets? Because, like, if you get a bunch of first-round picks right, does that win you a bracket? Probably not. It's probably getting the Final Four teams right? So, but when people brag about their brackets, what do they brag about? Oh, I had that 13.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Like, I think it's upsets early, chalk late.
I mean, that's what I've got. I ended up with, and you guys are going to laugh at me, I ended up with 4-1 seeds.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I only have one seed.
It's happened before. It happened in 2008.
So you have all the ones.
I had Florida State in there, and I talked my way back into Gonzaga. I had Tennessee in there, and I talked my way into Virginia.
I got two 1 seeds, and they're both on the – one is in the South, one is in the Midwest. UNC and Virginia, but then on the other side, I got Michigan State and Syracuse.
Well, yeah, you went with an 8 seed. So
yeah,
I went with
Syracuse.
You're way out on a limb there. I'll say this. Reports are that P.J. Washington for Kentucky was in a boot with a foot problem.
Oh, great. There goes my national championship.
I think Duke and North Carolina are the safest picks right now. They feel like the best two teams in college basketball. But that's just what I've seen.
I can't see UK beating North Carolina.
Yeah.
And the way that UK scares me, and this is the reason why they scare me. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's a huge UK fan, Emily, and she just totally just like went in on me because I said UK was going to lose against UNC. And no, they're not. They're going to beat UNC. Watch and see. I bet you $20. So I got to bet. If I would win, I got to give them
Thousand golf balls?
If I win, I got to give up $20. But no, if I lose, I got to give up $20. If I win, I get 1,000 fruit roll-ups. Because her daughter loves fruit roll-ups, which in turn, I get the 1,000 fruit roll-ups. Which then I give back to baby L because she's going to eat all the fruit roll-ups up.
First of all, giving your baby fruit roll-ups is bad parenting. Number two.
It's not bad parenting. Fruit roll-ups, kids need sugar.
Good Lord.
Kids don't need sugar.
Yes, they do.
No, they don't.
Your high and mighty anti-fruit roll-up.
It's not high and mighty. Sugar is destroying our country.
Destroying our country?
Speaking of
fruit. Don't tell me I'm high and mighty because I want my kids to be healthy. Don't
tell
me that.
But you can't say that it's bad parenting because somebody's giving
their
kid fruit roll-ups.
It's a joke. Settle down.
Goodness gracious, but
where do you find 1,000 fruit roll-ups?
You
got to
go to Costco.
They don't even. That's not even.
You got to buy a bunch of them. You got to buy boats of them. Yeah, boatloads of them.
Miss, can I get a cart?
But no, here's the thing. What scares me, like
I
told her.
I need a pallet of fruit roll-ups.
What I told her, I said, this is what scares me. The one thing that really scares me is that now, I went to bat for Coach Calipari. After that UT, and y'all know how I went to bat for Coach Calipari. Like, he's one of the best coaches. But after that UT game, I don't think so. He's going to be the reason why they lose.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, he's going to be why they lose.
Along with every other smart basketball human on the planet.
He's going to be the reason why they lose. I'm telling you.
Okay.
He's going to do something. He lost them the UT game. He slowed the game up.
Yeah.
It's probably because he was eating sugar.
He wasn't eating sugar. That's why.
As Derek Mason at 7:45 is eating a lollipop.
Yeah.
Eating
speaking a lollipop. Of sugar, no,
it's a, gonna have the diabetes over there.
37 grams of sugar in your left hand right now.
It's a.
Don't tell me I'm a snob because I don't want to give my kids sugar.
It's
That's
a
ridiculous.
Tootsie.
It's I'm
a
with you.
Tootsie pop.
Ridiculous.
I yell at my wife every night when I see my girls eating Dunkaroos and all this other nonsense.
It's ridiculous. It's okay. Garbage.
Get hold a celery
on.
Stick.
Hold on.
Grab some carrots.
Get a celery.
All right, grab the Hidden Valley Ranch, get a bag of baby carrots, and do it the right way.
Has it hurt your kids? Has it hurt your kids?
Yeah, because when it's 9:30, when it's 9:30, when it's 9:30,
that's not what I'm saying.
Let him finish.
When it's 9:30, the irony
say
is you
that
saying
to me.
That.
Say that to anybody. Say that to somebody.
When it's 9:30 at night and they're doing the 40-yard dash down the living room hallway, that's an issue.
Hold on. Now that is not. I'm not going to say that's bad parenting. That is just. You got to be careful because you can't give kids sugar after a certain point of time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And because you give it to them after 8 o'clock, somewhere around there, they're going to be up all night.
Speaking of fruit roll-ups, when we come back, one man, our next guest, very disrespectful
Ooh.
To the fruit roll-up.
Mm-hmm.
We will explain because it happened on social media. Citations will be handed out next. The only guest that requests an entrance song here on Morning Drive is Adam Vingan. He does a great job covering the Preds for The Athletic and a terrible job on social media ranking snacks from the 90s.
Wow.
And he's here to join us on Morning Drive. Adam Vingan, Dunkaroos over fruit roll-ups, your rationale.
How can you argue against anything that involves dipping cookies in frosting? Especially at that age, when that's all you care about. I mean, gushers are exactly what they are. The consistency is just terrible. I mean, how can you not love something that's basically a receptacle to frosting in your mouth?
Mm. I just thought
he makes
you
a good
were,
point there, Nick.
He does, but I think you were very dismissive of the whole fruit category of snacks.
See,
I enjoyed fruit roll-ups, but definitely not to the extent that I enjoyed Dunkaroos.
So mine was probably the oatmeal cream pie. That I know that makes me
those are great too.
I know that makes
I
me
really enjoyed those as well.
So I'm all about the oatmeal cream pie. I'm the Gushers though. That was pretty revolutionary when they came out because I never really got fruit roll-ups as a kid, but I would like you know get them from I'd be making the trades at the lunchroom trying to get fruit roll-ups. But when the Gushers came out. That was, you know, it's sugar encased in sugar, and when you bite into the outside sugar, you get the inside sugar, and there's nothing wrong with that, Adam.
No, perhaps not. I remember as a kid that I did not like the gushing. It just did not sit right in my mouth. So, you know, oatmeal cream pies are certainly a solid choice as well. Every time I'm at the grocery store and I walk by them, I always think, do you think they'll be as good today as they were when I was a kid?
Oh, yeah, they are.
But I haven't gotten them.
This is why you don't
maybe one day.
This is why you don't go down that aisle. Yeah. That's how I avoid it. I just don't go down that aisle.
I'm telling you, oatmeal cream pies, but when I do indulge in one, yeah, they taste the same.
So mm-hmm.
They're so good.
Nick Saban really would concur.
You can't just eat one.
That's correct.
Adam, how many more nights do I need to see the Predators do what they did the last three games before I'm allowed to buy into what I'm seeing?
Oh, that's a good question. I think you need to see it at least for two more games. I think if they can play like this against Pittsburgh, who is playing as they typically do at this point of the season. I mean, the Penguins are following their usual trajectory where they struggle at some point in the middle of the season and everybody wonders, is this the end of the Penguins as we know them? And then they always turn it on when it counts. And that's what they've been doing right now, even though they did lose last night to the Carolina Hurricanes. But if they win on Thursday, and especially Saturday, if they can win in Winnipeg, which they have struggled to do, and they have struggled against the Jets in general, I feel like, the last couple of times they've seen them. If they can win these two next two games, then I think you can come onto the air on Monday morning and feel confident that this team seems to have righted the ship. And the last two games have certainly been impressive. I mean, you look at last night. I mean, they shut down the Toronto team that is very much struggling over the last couple of weeks. But as we know, is a very dynamic offensive team, but the Predators shut them out in two games and held them to 40 combined shots in those two games, which is no small feat. So that combined with the game in San Jose I think they're on the right track, but I'd like to see them play two more games against two tough opponents like that. And then next week, I think if that's the case, then you can start to feel confident.
Adam, Brian Boyle had a goal last night. If you go around the league right now, of all the guys that changed locations at the deadline, is there a guy playing better or who has done more than Brian Boyle?
I think there probably is. But maybe when you're thinking about those players, you're thinking about the higher-end players than Brian Boyle. The first player that comes to mind, for example, is Mark Stone, who's been phenomenal in Vegas, and that team, I think, has lost one game since he was traded to the Vegas Golden Knights. So, and I think Mark Stone might get my vote. But in terms of what you probably expected from Brian Boyle when he was traded here versus what he's actually done, personally, he's exceeded my expectations. I remember talking to Corey Matisak, who reports on the Devils for the Athletic, when the trade went down, and I asked him for a scouting report, and basically he said that Brian Boyle was sort of a special team specialist. He'll play on the power play in that front position, so get penalty kill time, but other than that, he's a fourth line forward, who wasn't incredibly productive at 5-on-5, and we've seen that here. I mean, he's been quite productive at 5-on-5. And really, I just think the Predators have been a really good fit. I was thinking about this yesterday. They may write on it for the Athletic. He was a trade deadline acquisition for the Toronto Maple Leafs a couple of years ago, and he had 3 assists in 21 regular season games for them. He already has 5 goals for the Predators, if I'm not mistaken. It just seems like the fit in Nashville has been very good for him, the way that he's been used. His line mates, for the most part, I think, have really put him in a position to succeed. And, I think I tweeted at the game last night after he scored that, as I said before, he's exceeded my expectations, and he's been a very good fit here. And I received at least 4 or 5 tweets that said, I really hope the Predators re-sign him this summer. And I think it would be wise of them to do that. I think he's really fit into this room, even though he's 34 years old. He doesn't really seem to be, breaking down in any particular way. So I really do think it would be wise of them to consider re-signing him this time.
Final one for you. We're talking to Adam Vingan. So we get the Austin Watson news late on Monday. David Poile does the media rounds yesterday and speaks publicly about Watson. What is your best educated guess or prediction as to if and when we will see him again?
That's a good question. I think David told Willie and Darren yesterday that he's expected to practice today, even though they're not holding a formal practice. They're holding a very optional/limited practice. And it's a good question because when he was placed into the substance abuse program in late January, I think the Predators had to operate under the assumption that they weren't going to see him again. And since he has been out, they acquired Brian Boyle and they acquired Wayne Simmonds, who also scored last night. Two players who, in a lot of ways, do what Austin Watson does. And in terms of Brian Boyle, I think Brian Boyle does Austin Watson better than Austin Watson in terms of what he brings on the ice. So I'm very curious to see how they decide to use them and also just how they are in terms of acclimating him back into the lineup. From a physical and mental standpoint, as Peter Laviolette mentioned yesterday morning. So I'm not sure Austin Watson is an everyday player for this team anymore. I mean, I expect when he comes into the lineup, he'll be a somewhat regular, but I don't expect him to play every game anymore. I don't want to necessarily say he's been replaced, but, the players that were brought in to sort of replace him, for lack of a better term, have done a good job. So I mean, I expect him to be back in the lineup at some point before the end of the regular season, but in the with the rest of the regular season and the playoffs, I'm not sure he's going to play every day.
Adam, good stuff. We appreciate the time, and if you ever want to get together and go shopping for fruit roll-ups and all the good snacks, let me know. I'll give you a few pointers.
All right, we'll pick up some oatmeal cream pies, too.
You got it. There he is. Adam Vingan covers the Preds for The Athletic. When we come back, we'll kick off hour number 3 with the only way we could possibly derail a show on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock. Buck Rising, next on Morning Drive.